Stunned silence.
What is
this? A bit of an episode.
So must be doing something.
And it's playing its playing this.
Tell us what you mean.
Like, I just can't think of it.
I love the enthusiasm. You're tuned to the 15th Station, New Zealand's first Catholic podcast. This is episode 107 for August 15, 2016, which makes it our 9th birthday. Gosh, woo! Nearly double digits. To celebrate, we're lucky to welcome back Helen. How are you, Helen?
Good, thanks, James. How are you?
Good. Good to talk to you. Thank you very much for making the time. And since the episode number one, the one, the only, Gavin. How are you, Gavin?
Good, thanks, James. Yeah, it's been a while. It's 9 years.
Nine long years.
I think I now know what a podcast is, which I didn't before episode.
Actually, it'll be funny to go back. Well, I'm not going to go play. People can go back to it. They go to our website, www.station15.co.nz. You can go find the first episode, which we recorded in a cupboard, pretty much.
More or less.
Under the stairs. We should call it the Harry Potter episode. I was trying to find an area in the Pompalia Centre, wasn't it, that had a bit of soundproofing.
Yeah, we didn't find one.
Not so much.
Anyone would find out if they listened to it.
That's right. Sounds like we're talking in a closet, because we were. But yes. We're not today. Here we are 9 years later, using the power of the internet to connect us from far afield. How are things over there in Australia, mate?
Well, yeah, good, thanks. I've just had a little bit of a break and got some warmer weather. So up in Queensland, so back in Sydney now, where it's a bit cooler, but still lovely weather. Spring has not sprung yet, but it feels like it.
It's on the way. And telling you, I see you out there with the family. I see on a farm. Saw that getting out there, getting a bit of the old. When the weather has been good, because it's been a bit rough. Following it from afar, as I've been overseas for a couple of weeks for work, and I've just got back, and it's been a bit of a shock when you come back from 100 degrees Fahrenheit in the US, which is, you know, close to 40 degrees. And then you come off the plane into New Zealand and it's, you know, 5 degrees.
And pouring rain.
But that just feels like home, really, doesn't it? We've got a good lineup today. Some good stories, some sad stories. We'll start with a very sad story, but this is from The Guardian. Exactly a week after two terrorists killed Father Jacques Hamel, while he said Mass in his own church, nearly 2,000 mourners paid their respects to the Catholic priest, described by his sister as my brother, everyone's brother. The emotionally powerful ceremony in Rouen Cathedral, attended by the French Interior Minister, Bernard Cazeneuve, 9 years and I still can't pronounce the names, Cazeneuve, and religious, see if I said it with just like compunction, if I was just like, I'm convicted to it, everyone would believe me. And religious leaders, including Muslim representatives, took place amid high security. Hundreds of people who could not get into the cathedral watched the ceremony from under umbrellas on a big screen. Dominic Lebrun, the Archbishop of Rouen, told mourners after his throat was slit, Amel pushed one of his attackers with his feet, saying, "Get away, Satan," praising the murdered clergyman for 58 years of loyal service to the church. He said, "Jacques, you were a loyal disciple of Jesus. Where you went, you did good." Saluting representatives of the Muslim and Jewish faiths, he called for peace and tolerance, adding, "Never again." It was not a question of forgiving those who had made a pact with the devil, in his quotes, but called on those taken by, quote, demonic madness to remember their mothers who gave you life. Amel, who was 85, was among six people taken hostage when two men who had pledged allegiance to Islamic State stormed the church at Saint-Étienne-du-Rouvray. The attackers, Adel Kamish and Abdel Malik Pirjan, both 19, forced the priest to kneel before slitting his throat, then stabbed one of his elderly parishioners. Sister Danielle, one of the three nuns present, managed to escape and raise the alarm. The attackers were shot dead as they left the church. Kamish and Pirjan were, who are thought to have met for the first time only days before the attack after making contact on the encrypted messaging app Telegram, had both tried to join ISIS in Syria. Kamish had been released from prison where he had been awaiting trial for two attempts to join the jihadis and was wearing an electronic tag at the time of his attack, for all the good it did. Saint-Étienne-du-Rouvray's Muslims have opposed suggestions that Kamish could be buried in the town where he killed the local priest. Given that he's a terrorist who has done us much wrong, he doesn't deserve any respect, Mohamed Karabila, imam of the mosque in Saint-Étienne du Rouvray, told Europe 1 Radio. Gavin, when I heard this story, I was, distraught. I was furious. I was flabbergasted. But we'll talk about my opinions on it later on. What did you make of this? Terrible, terrible news.
Yeah, well, it happened. I was with my flatmate actually, and the news came on about 10 p.m. Australian time. So it had probably happened just an hour or so earlier in France. And just, yeah, I mean, it's hard to find the words, but certainly a word that it came to mind very quickly was cowards. Mm. To me, there can be nothing. I can't think of anything more cowardly than, young, fit teenage men, or presumably fit young teenage men, seeking some sort of power trip by attacking, killing an 85-year-old priest and terrorizing literally a number of elderly parishioners and nuns. I mean, it's just, it was just so terrible. And just, you know, you think of, I mean, how many of these things that are taking place in the Middle East that we never hear of? Mm. Things happen in the West and we hear a lot about them. Things that happen in parts of the world where the press doesn't exist to the same extent, or the freedom of the press doesn't exist. Obviously just such a terrible incident. Shows the, you know, just the sheer evil that is being faced in so many parts of the world. And, you know, if you think of the people in France who for so long have lived in relative peace, and in the last 2 years have had, you know, a number of just almost unspeakable tragedies happen. And while the number of deaths in this case is low compared to some of the others, the atrocity of it just is beyond the pale. Found it hard to describe how I was feeling at the time, really. But seeing the way that, often Muslim leaders are criticized for a lack of speaking out, we can't lay that blame or make that accusation in this case.
No, absolutely. I mean, Helen, similar sort of reaction from your point of view? I mean, it was pretty widespread. There was a lot of communication that came out about it. How did you react when you heard the news?
Oh, yeah, just shock and horror, isn't it? It's just the most sort of heinous crime, as you say, you know, two young men in a church full of elderly people, and let alone, I'm sure, very peaceful, loving and tolerant people who would probably have given them, you know, any food that they had, any clothes that they had, anything that they might have needed had they been people who had come in poverty. I guess the most heartwarming thing about it, if we try to find some positive, was, as you say, the reaction from the Muslims and the Muslim community within France. I mean, you can only imagine that, you know, the average Muslim person we know to actually be a very loving, peaceful, tolerant person. And they have just had such a bad rep over the years, haven't they, with all of these terrible atrocities taking place. And yet another event like this, it must just be sort of like a knife in their back as well. And I thought it was really beautiful, actually, that so many people attended the service from the Muslim community, and that they've just really gone out of their way to show love and support, which I find really encouraging and uplifting in a situation such as this, in the hope that something positive and, you know, God-given can come from such an awful event.
Yeah, there was, and so there were obviously a number of Muslims, including Muslim leaders, who went to this mass, the funeral itself, but there was this sort of more organic expression of it around France and I think in other neighbouring countries as well, where a number of Muslims went to their local Catholic churches on the Sunday after this happened. I guess and that would have been driven largely by on social media, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And here we are 9 years after we started podcasting, and you think about the power that the internet has, but then you look at basically it was the internet that allowed these two evil people to get in touch with each other. So, you know, in some ways we can reflect on the power, but also the potential evil that exists on the internet. But then the, you know, the power to rally people around the cause and say, you know what my Muslim brother did, you know, for those Muslims who part in this, is not who we are. We won't stand for it. And we're going to stand in solidarity with our fellow believers and just, you know, say this, you know, enough. And at some point everyone says enough and it just keeps happening. So
I think the thing for me that I was just so taken aback with is the lack of logic. And I mean, I shouldn't really be surprised because we're not talking about rational, logical, you know, quite frankly, sane people here. But what possible interpretation of scripture could lead you, be that Quran, Torah, or Bible, could lead you to the point where you think the right thing for me to do to honor God and his, you know, even if I've taken this declaration of holy war or whatever else, the right thing for me to do is to slaughter an innocent elderly man, like 85 years old while he's celebrating Mass. What possible glory do you think you're bringing to God when you do that? What possible forwarding of your cause do you think is going to come from do this? What glory, what reward is going to await you in heaven? Or, you know, what, you know, do you know what I mean? I just do not understand how anyone of any faith, you know, could possibly draw the connection and the parallel other than unbelievably backward, dark, just terrible thinking, which if you go back hundreds and hundreds of years to a far more primitive, basic, you know, low intelligence time, you saw it a bit more prevalent in society, where this idea of committing atrocities because you dehumanize the person you were dealing with. But this is the 21st freaking century. You know, we can sit here and talk about ISIS and you know, the politics that have led to the rise of their strength and blah blah blah, and America's role and all the rest of it. We can talk about the fact that there is some terrible loss of life on all sides of the conflict relating to this uprising that's happening in parts of the Middle East. And absolutely, I get the point that there is frustration around you know, the drone attacks and the bombings and the collateral damage and innocent people being killed in war. But there is something very different to that and going into a small town, you know, church, and I'm calling it what it is, slaughtering an innocent old man who has had nothing. He hasn't executed any of, he hasn't done anything. That's the thing that just sort of staggered me the most. And as you both have pointed out, the rallying of people of all faiths behind this has just actually harmed the cause that they were fighting for even further. So we've really got to look at it and say, what is causing 19-year-old kids to basically get to this state and think that this is something that they should do?
Yeah.
They're really, I mean, as a planet, we need to do some soul searching, because it just does feel that things are going to the dogs. When our next story has the Pope talking about young people providing an example for adults, those are not the kind of young people he's talking about, believe me. This is from Catholic News Service. Aware of the risk of being called naive or being accused of spouting platitudes, Pope Francis called on young people to model for adults the paths of mercy and respect, and then demonstrated what he meant. Quote, "Today we adults need you to teach us, like you're doing now, how to live with diversity and dialogue, to experience multiculturalism not as a threat, but as an opportunity," the Pope told young people gathered for a prayer vigil on the 30th of July in Poland. "Have the courage to teach us that it is easier to build bridges than walls. We need this," he said. "Many people find it easy to sit on the couch and tweet popular stereotypes like all Muslims are terrorists or immigrants steal our jobs." Pope Francis acknowledged that it is a huge task to build bridges, and he said he knew many people might not feel up to it at first. But he said Christians have an obligation to at least make an attempt. "Start small," he said. Take the hand of someone next to you. It is possible that no one will accept that extended hand, he said, but in life you must take risks. One who never risks never wins. At a time when civil discourse seems to not only have rejected political correctness, but also grandmas, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. Pope Francis said Christians are called to watch their tongues and their texting fingers. Quote, we are not here to shout against anyone. We are not about to fight. We do not want to destroy. We do not want to insult anyone, he said. We have no desire to conquer hatred with more hatred, violence with more violence, terror with more terror. These are some pretty good sentiments. Helen, do you think that you could do with some reverse mentoring, that youth could teach you a few things here about the kind of example they should be?
Oh, look, I'm offended. I consider myself the youth.
Oh,
don't
sorry.
I need to be teaching
the adults?
You should
be teaching. That's a good point. That's a good point.
Now I'm confused. Where am I in the story?
Well, you take whichever side you like.
Yeah. So I'm with the young people, and I think I need to teach the older generation. But then, now I'm confused. No, look, I think it is a really good point. And I think one thing that I notice, particularly with Facebook and the likes, is that people put stuff up on there, forgetting, of course, that it'll be there forever. But certainly they put stuff up on there that they wouldn't say to people's faces. And that always really concerns me, because I think people do often get siloed and sort of forget about the other side of the story. And, you know, cyberbullying is a really good example of that, isn't it? And that you put stuff up that you just would not, hopefully anyway, say or do in person. So I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned, and I think, you know, we are still all actually feeling our way with this explosion, particularly with things like social media over the last few years, as to, you know, how, what, when we are in appropriateness, and certainly we don't fully get it at the moment is what I think.
It's interesting, Gavin, he talks about the needing to teach others about living with diversity and dialogue, to experience multiculturalism as not as a threat but as an opportunity. Obviously, speaking in Europe, that's resonates, I think, very, very loudly. But it also has relevance over on our side of the world.
Yeah, and obviously this was said during World Youth Day. Well, maybe not obviously. It was said during World Youth Day. So it would have been said to a lot of people from all around the world as well. But, there is a sense, and I'm not one of those people who suggest that people over a certain age don't have the ability to be, embrace diversity and that sort of thing, like a lot of people would say on some of the big social issues at the moment. They say, Brexit, that's not a social issue maybe, but, you know, Brexit or same-sex marriage or a range of things, you know, oh, those old people are stuck in their ways and don't know what to do, and it's the young people who have the wisdom. And that's what, you know, they should be sharing, so I don't sort of buy into that school of thought. But there are certainly some aspects of modelling behaviour that among young people probably can be shared. You know, that idea of people showing solidarity with, refugees and asylum seekers. There are some areas in which young people do have a greater sense of responsibility for that, which is, I guess, sometimes ironic when you think about the older generations and how some of them have had to, some of them would have come from refugee-style families at the end of World War II and those sorts of things. So it is a chance to empower young people and, I guess, to, you know, issue that challenge to them. You know, you do have a responsibility. It's not your job just to swan along and let other people look after you. You do have a place of leadership. And this whole idea, you know, or the youth of the future of the church versus, you know, the youth of the present of the church. So really challenging and encouraging young people to take on leadership, to take on responsibility, and to where they have the opportunity to influence people, to do that, to make society the more harmonious place. That's basically the opposite of the last story that we were talking about.
That's the thing that I think is quite the contrast is very stark, isn't it? The sense of particularly we're not about to fight, we do not want to destroy, we do not want to insult anyone. You know, there's this real call, I think, Helen, there to be known by, you know, be known by your fruits, be known by what you sow behind you, as opposed to, as opposed to the previous story where they'll be known for what they have done. That's a good call.
Yeah, it's a really good call. It's a beautiful call to arms when we compare it to someone like ISIS and what their call to arms is all about. that, you know, we actually want to be spreading the peace, you know, of St. Francis of Assisi and the love of Jesus around. We're not here to fight. We don't want violence to show violence with more violence. I think it's beautiful.
I do get a sense that there's maybe the problem that we see with some parts of the world at the moment is because of the poverty, because of the heartbreak and the hurt and the violence that people have suffered, they just lose all perspective and aren't able to have a rational conversation, you know, Gavin, and sort of think about, well, is this the kind of thing that a loving God would actually want me to do? But I think that's the point that the Pope's getting to, right? Violence just begets more violence. And if you're just going to respond in that way, you're not going to move anything forward.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the old idea of an eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth was sort of moved on a bit from there. But I mean, I'll say, let me be honest, you know, I live in comfort in Sydney, you know, preaching this to people who you know, say people live in Syria, people who live in Libya, you know, it's probably a harder message for them to try and embrace when they're seeing it in their everyday lives. You know, we all have our own little challenges, but often we can look at some of the real burdens that people carry overseas, and we have this idea that, yeah, we're not, this is how we should respond to things. So the Pope challenging people again, you know, it's probably going to be hard sometimes. You're going to want to respond in a certain way, but, you know, there's this person named Jesus who came to teach us a different way. And he might have come 2,000 years ago, but what he said then applies still today.
Mm-hmm. I think that the call there in particular I like is start small. Take the hand of someone next to you, right? It's possible that no one will accept that extended hand, but in life you must take risks, and one who never risks never wins. I love that sentiment about just starting small, and oftentimes, you know, especially in light of our previous story, there is the sense that the problem's too big. It's just too big. And the reason why it seems that way is because it is too big. It is actually not something that we individually can solve. But if we are able to reflect Christ and start small, extend the hand to the person next to you individually, and if everyone does that, then the ripple effect is huge. So I do like that fact. I do like the practical aspects of what the Pope's calling for there, and hopefully that will stir up a bit of a hornet's nest of action. Our next story is stirring up a hornet's nest of a different kind. This is from NZ Catholic. A pro-life advertisement in a Wellington magazine sparked a furious reaction on social media. Can I just make a point that most things spark a furious reaction on social media? But carry on. But Voice for Life says it also received much positive feedback. The full-page ad, which ran in Capital magazine, spelt out the demographic and social consequences of preventing 500,000 Kiwis being born. The ad noted the milestone of 500,000 abortions looming for New Zealand since the first abortion clinic opened in 1974. Voice for Life also proposed adoption as an option for mothers carrying an unexpected baby. Quote, there are no unwanted babies. A loving home awaits everyone. It continued, Voice for Life believes abortion is wrecking New Zealand's future. It kills babies who could enjoy love and a future with loving parents. Heated criticism of the ad was posted by dozens of commentators on Capital Magazine's Facebook page. Critiques include allegations of misogyny, being archaic and conservative, offensiveness, and lack of balance. The ad apparently was not balanced. Capital Magazine's managing editor Alison Franks defended the decision to run the ad. We decided, questionable though its message might be, supporting freedom of speech was important, Ms. Franks wrote on Facebook. She adds that the differences of opinion are part of the diversity of Wellington. Voice for Life's Steve Jowney told NZ Catholic that we have received much positive feedback following the ad. Mr. Jowney said he had read the Facebook reactions and found them typical of that part of culture that considers abortion as acceptable. So, Gavin, I'm going to run an assumption here just for our little discussion that given that it is an ad, being an advertisement, that Voice for Life will have paid Capital Magazine to run said ad. Is that a fair assumption?
It's typically how it works.
That's how advertisements work, right? So these concepts around, I love it. I love this. It's a lack of balance. The last time I read an advertisement that... it didn't really... Yeah, you don't read a lot of ads for Pepsi that say, Coke's good too. I mean, what a ridiculous argument. But anyway, 500,000 abortions looming for New Zealand. That is a pretty sobering statistic in a population of 4.7 million, I think it is. What did you make of all of this, Gavin, of this furore that was kicked up on social media, would be the first time ever, about this ad?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a... that's this line of reasoning, or this argument, I guess, about the number of the statistics, probably the word I'm looking for, about the number of people who have died and the equivalent population that would be. So the idea that, you know, the equivalent of the populations of cities X, Y, and Z have not been born because of abortion. I think it's quite a powerful message that they've used. It's interesting, you know, I think it's good that a publication is open to the idea of free speech and pushing, allowing this message to be shared. I don't know if they've tried putting it in other places. I think the story suggests they've been able to have it published in other publications as well, but I know that there have been in the past publications that have been unwilling to run ads of this nature because of the controversy around it. So kudos to the publisher for agreeing to do it. It's an important discussion. There's been some legislation debated recently over here in Queensland around abortion. There continue to be a range of aspects of this broader topic that often come before Parliament for a range of reasons. I think there have been some parental notification laws coming before the Parliament in New Zealand recently. I haven't watched it closely, but I've seen some conversation about that. So it's a ongoing issue that the church and a number of people, Catholic and not, have a strong view on, and it's important that the debate's allowed to happen.
The thing that's interesting for me, Helen, is Capital Magazine. I don't read very often, to be honest. No. I didn't even know it existed, to be frank. But that would be because I'm a terrible Aucklander who pays no attention to what goes on in Wellington. But what I did see at the weekend in our national newspaper, I think it was the New Zealand Herald, was a two-page ad. Oh, no, wait a minute. It wasn't an ad. It was an editorial lamenting the fact... Oh, not, sorry, editorial is not fair. It was a commentary piece. It was a column that had been written that was lamenting the fact that we, as a society, are still treating abortion as a taboo. Yeah. The last taboo. Yeah. Now, where is the outcry and where is the responsiveness around that being unbalanced, offensive, and quite frankly, a ridiculous argument? I wonder.
You won't get any. That's
not so
the
much,
problem.
No.
And I think it just shows you how far the pendulum has swung, and that it is so supposedly so normal, so accepted, such a right, etc. That that's exactly the point. That how dare anyone take out a pro-life ad, but. We're not allowed to display it without a balanced view. I mean, as you say, what a ridiculous comment. If it's a paid advertisement, I can pay to advertise whatever I want.
Yeah.
I do totally agree. Kudos to Capital Magazine for printing it, because that does, you know, show that there is some freedom of speech in New Zealand. I mean, I have very strong opinions about that exact issue. You know, as a doctor in New Zealand, if you, or any health professional, if you're approached by a person who wants to have an abortion and you obviously have a ethical or moral reason that you do not want to be any part of that decision, you have to declare your bias and say, okay, well, I don't support abortion, so I have to tell you that straight away. You know, if you want to terminate this consultation now, that's absolutely fine. You know, I won't charge you for it. And here's the names of five other people that you can go and see around the corner, and you practically have to offer to give them, make the appointment for them and, you know, personally taxi them over there, for goodness sake, to make sure that you don't offend or upset anybody. But I feel really uncomfortable about the fact that equally a strong supporter of abortion who, if a 15-year-old Maori girl walked into the office pregnant, wanting to keep the child, would actually say, hey, look, come on, seriously, you need to have an abortion. Here's your referral. You need to go tomorrow. Why are you even thinking about keeping this baby? They don't have to declare their bias, which is that they refer X number of patients for abortions per year, that they think that the law as it stands is archaic and terrible and should be liberalised. Do you see my point?
Yeah,
I just feel really, really uncomfortable that we have this total dichotomy as to how it's viewed in a professional as well as a social sense.
The thing that's what's fascinating to me is, I always try and sort of follow the debate as rationally as I can to try and understand how the other side sees it. The connection, sorry, just to clarify before, it wasn't the NZ Herald, it was stuff.co.nz. I want to make sure I don't want to get that down the wrong way. It was stuff.co.nz. It was a piece written by Michelle Duff, 2,889 words worth of piece written for the Sunday magazine. But my biggest concern, I guess, with it is this connection that's been made between abortion and women's rights. And in doing that, what it's become is it's moved alongside that actually for women to have equality in society, right alongside having the vote and not being treated as chattels, you know, as belonging to men, is the right for them to terminate pregnancy. And no one, and the article the weekend that the stuff.co.nz article, no one likes to look at two things. One, the numbers, which is what the ad in the Capital brings up. I mean, those numbers are not up for debate. They are what they are. So what you're then left with is people debating whether or not they were actually babies, whether that was actually life or whether it was something else. And the other thing is, and this is something which I think we've talked about on the podcast in previous episodes over the 9 years, Gavin, but it's maybe warrants restating. It seems to me that the focus on abortion from a women's rights perspective is focusing on the consequence of an existing choice. So the reality is that in the vast, vast majority of abortions that are carried out in New Zealand, of under the Sterilisation Act and all of the rest of it, under the Health and Safety Act, sorry, are carried out by women who, there has to be under the mental, I think, what's the term, what's the phrase that's used, Helen? It's like severe mental...
Yeah.
Threat to the mental health of the mother. Severe mental threat to the health of the mother, right?
Yeah, it used to be 98.6%, something like that.
Yeah, so we're establishing the numbers here, it is 90%+ are beyond the edge cases that usually push rational people. So a whole bunch of people get into the debate on rape and incest cases, but the reality is that the vast, vast, vast majority is not in those situations, right? We're talking 90%+ is not in those situations. So what's actually happening is people in that situation are either, to the examples that were used in the article and stuff, contraception failure, or they had just decided that they weren't going to have more kids and then it's an unplanned pregnancy, or they had the pregnancy younger than they thought in an unstable relationship, and they sort of thought, oh, look, I'm not in a good place to bring this life into the world. The choice was the part where you had sex. That was the choice, right?
But that's what society doesn't accept.
No, that exactly
that is what society does not accept.
Exactly. Yep. So what they're left with is they say, that's not the choice. I mean, you're just going to have sex. It's impossible to abstain. It's impossible not to do that. So that's not even a choice. And then what you're now going to do is make the whether or not you continue with the pregnancy the choice. The choice, which we should be fighting for, that every single woman and man in this country should have, is the freedom to choose who, with whom they sleep with and when. That absolutely should be the thing that is defended and protected. There should not be rape, there should not be incest, there should not be pressure for teenage sex or any of this kind of stuff. That's where all the focus and effort should be. Because if you do that, then you're not in a situation where you're trying to undo a choice that has already been made. Pregnancy is a consequence of a choice. It's not that you choose to get pregnant. That's the thing that does my head in, Gavin, with this, is that you've got the sense of saying that no one wants to actually steer into that because it's such a socially unacceptable argument.
Yeah, and I think you're right that we might have spoken about this once or twice in the last 9 years. And every time I think I've agreed with your astute analysis. Just to sort of get back to this idea of freedom of speech, friend of the show, she's never been on the show, maybe we should invite her on the show, Rachel Wong. Who I suspect some of us know.
Yep.
So I remember she wrote an article about abortion a few months ago. There'd been an article in the Australian press, might have just been online, and she wrote a response to it, and she kept posting a link to it on Facebook, and it kept getting censored, essentially. Mm. So I don't know if either of you saw that, but there seemed to be this effort that her, you know, she's a very bright young lady, you know, very well-considered article on this important issue, and it kept getting, you know, it's being taken down due to failing to adhere to posting policy.
Yeah.
So she had that happen over several times. So the you know, the great bastion of free speech, the internet, can even be a place where this important debate can't
take place. Yeah.
So that's part of what we're, you know, what some of us are still battling to have this rational debate, or attempt to have a rational debate anyway.
Yeah, well, that's because we're not really balanced, and we're a bit misogynistic, obviously. And we just don't know. We don't know about this stuff. Maybe we don't even know about Jesus. This is actually our next story from the NZ Catholic. Many Catholics seem to have been inoculated against the faith in their youth, learning a little bit about the faith and turning against it because they missed having an enormous encounter with Jesus.
That would be a great to have an enormous encounter with Jesus.
It's still the jet lag. I chalk it up to the jet lag. Holy Cross Seminary Formation Director Father Michael Geelan said many people today are protected by a huge shield. Father Geelan spoke at the open teaching night at the Catholic Discipleship College in Takapuna. The generation we live in today has a huge shield protecting them. That shield is indifference, apathy, and relativism. You do what you want, what you like, I do what I like, and as long as we don't bother each other, we can continue happily in our ways. Anything you say to me will just wash off my shield because I don't really care, he told a group of largely young adults. He said the way to cut through this, that is the gospel message of Jesus. I can never say this in...
Kerygma.
Can cut through the shield, he stressed. Kerygma, Father Geelan explained, is the first proclamation of the Christian faith. Pope Benedict XVI called it the central explosive proclamation of the faith. There are people in your life right now who are dying to hear you proclaim this truth. Some will die without hearing it, he said. Quoting Pope Francis in Evangelium Gaudium, he said, on the lips of the catechist, the first proclamation must ring over and over. Jesus Christ loves you. He gave his life to save you, and now he is living at your side every day to enlighten, strengthen, and free you. That's the kerygma. Father Geelan said the challenge of the church is forming Catholics in and for kerygma, because you won't bear light unless you're burning with it, he said. Helen, do you think that youth today, and not so youth, I mean, as a young person, do you think that youth today,
thank you,
and not so youth like Gavin, old people, are inoculated against knowing the faith and knowing Christ?
I do think there's definitely something to be said about it. The words that they're talking about, apathy, indifference, I think that's our biggest plague, really, isn't it? That people think that they know what Christianity and Catholicism is about, but unless, as it says, you've had that true encounter with Jesus, which I don't think that necessarily they will have had, then they do. They put up indifference and apathy, turning away from that they think that they know, but they don't really know. So I personally think it was actually quite bang on. And we know ourselves that, you know, our level of catechism has been very poor, and that indeed most of us have gone forward and sort out our own catechism, because it really just is not hitting the mark in a way to engage people in a true relationship with Jesus and in a truly life-sustained faith.
Gavin, do you find, I mean, you've got friends, Gavin? Some of those friends, three, I assume, aren't Catholic, but may be of other faiths, or maybe, you know, Protestant. Do you find that some of those friends maybe think that they know what you believe because they think they know what Catholics believe, and actually as you explore that, they're a little bit mistaken? Or is it just...
I think that's probably a shared experience that I have, and others listening would as well. Just listening to the story, I understand that in New Zealand, the Great Feast of the Assumption was Sundayized recently. But when I was at at Mass yesterday, our reading for the Sunday the 14th, was about how Jesus, the divisive nature of Jesus, and the young priest, who's probably 30, gave a really interesting homily. I'll get to a point in a moment, but just this idea of sort of, you know, the disruptive or radical nature of Jesus, I guess, is what I'm getting at, that Father Gielen, I think, is getting a little bit towards, you know, that you should be burning with the light of Jesus, or with the light of Christ. Mm-hmm. So this gospel passage talks about how, yeah, Jesus is someone who's actually as divisive as he is unifying, because this idea that there is no indifference when it comes to Jesus, was sort of the point he was getting at.
It's the whole sort of, you know, lukewarm will be spat out.
Yeah. So he's talking about, you know, first century Palestine, and he's saying, you know, someone, Jesus comes into someone's life physically back then, not likely physically at the moment, but Jesus comes into someone's life, and someone either embraces that and is therefore changed, or they reject it and therefore have no openness to it. So this idea, as you were reading that out, having read this story before hearing that homily, just made me think about this idea about how Jesus can transform, and indeed forming Catholics, and, you know, this idea that you can be burning with the light, burning with the faith of Jesus, is something that can truly transform them. And I think, you know, as you've both said, you know, there can be a sense in which maybe our generation or other generations haven't been formed in quite the same way others were, to know and to live and to understand our faith.
There's a concerning thing for me about this, the comment, and I think he is very, very, it's an accurate description to talk about being inoculated against. And as you were saying, Helen, I mean, in many cases, what we've all done is gone and explored ourselves, the different parts of the faith that maybe we weren't taught about in school or whatnot. Yet, if you're inoculated against it, then you're not going to be spending as much of your own time searching. And it's such a shame, because it's actually really easy to find the answers nowadays with things like the internet. You know, you can, you know, the catechism can be explained in multiple ways. You can listen to podcasts, for example, which we didn't back in my day, we didn't have that kind of stuff. And I kind of look at that and I say, that's the thing that's really worrying, is it's, you know, something maybe a little bit worse than not being able to get access to the information. It's being able to get access to it and not even wanting to search out for it. So I think,
we're trying to discern what is the, you know, the actual stuff we do want to find, because sometimes, you know, the dangers of the internet is you can find lots of stuff, but how accurate or you know, truly nourishing is it?
Well, if it's the 15th station, I'm sure it's extremely nourishing.
Nutritional value high.
High. Just be careful if the recommendation you heard was from your parish secretary, because according to Pope Francis. It's from the tablet. Now, pre-warning, for those who are long-time listeners of the show, we usually try and have a light story. We struggled a little bit this week, to be honest, so this one could be considered light. I think the Pope wasn't serious, but the Vatican today released parts of a transcript of a private meeting that took place between Pope Francis and the Polish bishops on the first day of his visit to Poland for World Youth Day. Unlike previous trips where the Pope has given public speeches upbraiding national hierarchies, Francis chose a closed-door meeting with the 117-member Bishops' Conference in the Krakow Cathedral. The released transcript, translated by the Catholic News Service, is of question-and-answer portion of the 90-minute meeting. Answering a question from a Polish auxiliary bishop...
We won't name.
Leszkiewicz. Leszkiewicz, you reckon?
I reckon.
He's German. He's Jewish as well, apparently. On whether parishes were still the best way to reach people, and on how to build up a missionary zeal, the Pope stressed that the parish, quote, is the house of the people of God and must have its doors wide open to receive people. But he warned, quote, and I'm quoting the Pope here, there are parishes with parish secretaries who seem to be, a quote within the quote, disciples of Satan and scare people. Parishes with closed doors, he said, Like, you've got to wonder if he, you know, the Pope's a very smart man, but that's a heck of a soundbite. The highly anticipated meeting became at a time of reported disagreements within the Polish Church over certain aspects of the Pope's teaching, including his appeals for sheltering refugees.
I think that's probably enough, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's.
I sent you a lot more than that, but I think
you did. You did, and I thank you for saving me trying to read the next gentleman's
name.
Yeah,
the next name's a beauty.
Disciples of Satan? Really? Gavin, you've worked with a lot of parish secretaries in your time. Do you think the Pope's got a point here?
Well, so...
Disciples of Satan? Really?
So, I just don't know if he was being satirical or sarcastic or...
He's a bit of a funny guy, but I mean, that's some pretty serious stuff to be using those kind of words.
It's not the sort of thing like, if you're a Catholic, you probably don't want to joke about someone being a disciple of Satan.
No.
Now, so, as we talked about before the show, we think that there is an important message behind it. Now, I probably wouldn't have used the term disciples of Satan. I might have turned it around and said, parish secretaries are beautiful people, and we love them, and it is important that they help us to be those windows to the church that can encourage people to come
rather
in.
Rather than a closed door. Oh, I like where you're going with that. See, that's...
So yeah, just the idea, you know, James, you work in a particular sector. Helen, you work in a particular sector.
Mm-hmm.
Often we aren't the people who answer the phone when someone calls.
That's a good point.
Someone else does. And in many cases, it'll be the parish secretary who answers the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and it's important that those people, whoever they are that answer the phone first, make the impression that is going to be welcoming in the case of the
That's
church.
Right.
So I think, you know, that's really what he was trying to get at. And maybe he shouldn't have called them disciples of Satan.
Yeah, I do get the sense sometimes, like, the, you know, Father Lombardi, the, you know, the Vatican press secretary, must be sometimes going, oh, just like slapping his head going, no, Holy Father, no, we just talked about this in media training.
Yeah, he left. Father Lombardi's had enough, he's gone.
Oh, has he?
Yeah, well, he has actually, but that was a long time coming. So Greg Burke, who used to be on Fox News, is now the man.
Is he?
And I think he's got a female... deputy or
how long ago did Lombardi leave?
Oh, like in the last 2 weeks. I think might have been since World Youth Day.
Wow. He's like, that's it. I'm out of here. I don't want to have to face the parish secretaries back in the local parish.
Well, yeah, that would have been the straw that broke the
camel's back. He's like, I just can't anymore. I think, yeah. Helen, do you think there's a point? Do you think what the Pope's trying to get at is that sometimes parish secretaries maybe can be a little bit less, they can be a bit more door than window?
Oh, absolutely. I've personally had experiences ringing different parishes for different reasons. For example, making inquiries about main music or something like that. And you get a rather, you know, as with any service, which is what Gavin was alluding to, when you get a grumpy, unfriendly, you know, slightly harassed person on the end of the phone, you do just think, right, well, won't be going there at the end of the conversation, don't you?
Yeah.
And okay, I'm a committed Catholic, I'll just go somewhere else. But there are plenty of people, and I can, you know, name people who
hey,
I know
don't.
Personally have been turned away. Often, of course, you know, there's other issues that might play into it as well. And I guess the more common thing for us in reality is actually that people are turned off by individual priests for whatever reason.
I was just about
so
to say,
if they don't
I
like
think
this particular priest, then they won't, continue to attend.
It's amazing how deep those hurts can go. You know, people will say, oh, well, a certain priest that I went to years ago, you know, his homilies were really harsh, or, you know, I went to confession and he gave me 1,000 Hail Marys or whatever. I mean, I think that the trying to find the message maybe in a little bit of rough packaging from the Holy Father is the need to maybe acknowledge the fact that sometimes parish secretaries are the first face of the parish and what kind of face are they representing?
I did see some analysis, and actually, I think it was written by a priest. It might have been in the Catholic Herald, the UK paper,
right?
Where this priest said, "Well, mostly parish secretaries are the reflection of their priest, the parish priest, often. So maybe we need to get to the root cause of these quote unquote disciples of Satan, and maybe they're being." Molded in a certain way And we need to find the moulders, the sculptors of these people, and make sure that they're the people who are promoting this open, welcoming, encouraging environment through their secretaries and through their parishes.
Well, we are always open and welcoming in our environment here on the Interminets, and we'd love for you to, if this is the first time you've tuned in for our birthday episode, happy birthday to us just to have you here. But if you'd like to listen to some of our previous episodes, 100 and something of them, you can go check them out at www.station15.co.nz. And if you want to send us some birthday wishes, we would love to hear from you. You can reach us at podcast@station15.co.nz, or you can, if you'd want to tweet us, you can tweet us at station15. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/station15. Basically, 15th station on pretty much everything we could get it on, and you can reach us, and we'd love to hear from you. And for those who reached out to us recently and pointed out a couple of problems we had with the RSS feed, those have hopefully been fixed. There was a few missing episodes that were actually up on the website but not appearing in the RSS feed.
Ooh.
Yeah, but they've been fixed now. So thank you very much for those who sent them in.
And thanks, Tech Man, for fixing it.
That's right. If you have no idea what an RSS feed is, here's
you are Gavin.
Here's the non-techie summary. It means actually sometimes it's a bit of a pain to try and remember to download the 15th station on the 15th of the month. So you can go to our website, station15.co.nz, or you can go to iTunes and you can look up the 15th station and you can click on this button that says subscribe. And what you're doing at that point is you're actually getting the RSS feed, which means that when a new episode appears each month, it'll automatically download for free. We don't charge anything for that service because nobody does, really, when you're using RSS feeds. So it's all been fixed
like
now.
That sounds like real simple syndication to me.
It does. That's pretty much, look at you, Wikipedia.
Is that what it stands for?
I talk about, yeah.
No, I actually knew that. I did know that, actually.
You knew that.
9 years ago, I learned that.
Nine years. Well, happy birthday, Helen. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast tonight. Really appreciate you making the time.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Gavin, we wouldn't have been here if it wasn't for you. This is your fault.
It's your fault, and you know it, and everyone knows it's your fault.
Thank you very much, mate, for 9 years of good chats and good conversations, and hopefully we've kept some people interested while we've blathered on for 9 years. But thank you very much.
We got 130,000 or something downloads, so
something like that.
Someone's listening. I don't even have that many relatives, so
I probably do.
You've got a lot. Yeah. Thank you, James. Thank you, Helen.
Thanks, mate. And thank you, everyone else out there, for listening. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate always your feedback, your prayers, your support, and, of course, your continuing patronage. We'll keep going. Keep going. Let's see if we can... Well, I'm not going to say let's do it for another 9 years, but maybe. We'll see.
Let's get to 10 first, right?
Let's get to 10. We're the big 1-0. The big 1-0. But until next time, everyone, take care and God bless.
This production is affiliated with SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.